In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Wednesday today, 14 February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. I'm going to be honest with you here as we get going. I hate days like this, days where there has been a shooting in a school or at a concert. It's not our story, right? There is no marketplace angle, but you can't ignore it. So we are going to acknowledge it, trust that you have had your fill of it elsewhere, and turn to our news of this Wednesday. It came in directly at 8:30 this morning with a much-anticipated but kind of, honestly, underwhelming report on inflation, the Consumer Price Index, as it's known. Up a bit, but nowhere near as drastic as we'd all expected it to be. Nevertheless, one more data point for policymakers to consider as they figure out how to try to steer this economy. As it happens, one of those policymakers came by Marketplace World headquarters today. Robert Kaplan is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, also a member, by the way, of the Federal Open Market Committee. It sets interest rates, as you might know if you listen to this broadcast. Mr. Kaplan, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Got to start with the news of the day, inflation, consumer price index. Lots of hullabaloo about inflation and oh my God, the last week, 10 days. Are we more worried about that than we ought to be?
Well, we're at the stage in the cycle with unemployment at 4.1, 4.2%, and we think heading into the threes. Huh. Cyclical inflation pressures are building. I would expect the Fed will be reaching its making progress in reaching its 2% target during this year and next year. I think cyclical inflationary forces are building.
Just to get it out of the way, you think the Fed's going to raise interest rates probably three times this year?
Well, my base case, we're trained at the Fed. I don't speak for the whole group. I speak for myself, but my own view right now is, and base case is, that we should be removing accommodation three times this year. And we'll see how the economy unfolds during the year, whether it's more or less.
I'm going to translate the econ speak, even though you're not actually an economist. Removing accommodation means raising
the Fed funds.
There
you go. That's right.
Let me ask you about the volatility of the last week, 10 days, induced by that inflation fear. You have said it's healthy, and I'm not going to disagree with you, but I think what you mean is it's healthy that we let a little air out of the balloon.
Well, let's take it in pieces. Before this sell-off, we've gone 15 straight months basically without a 3% correction, and that hasn't happened in a very long time. In fact, you have a hard time finding in history when that's happened. The closest I can find maybe is the late 50s. Hmm. And so anytime I've learned from being in the markets my whole career, you see something you've never seen before or you haven't seen in 50 years, it tells you that probably there needs to be some adjustment. So I wouldn't have wished for the type of volatility
It was a speed with which it happened.
But,
1,000 points.
But I would also say to people, if volatility is somewhat higher when it settles out and there's more up and down in the market, that would be more typical of what I've experienced. The last 15 months, I would say, was atypical.
Since you mentioned it, the tax bill, the amount of debt that we're incurring in this economy going over the next 8 to 10 years, are you concerned?
Yeah, I am concerned. And so I've talked about three big issues, structural issues that I'm worried about. Aging demographics, i.e. the workforce is getting older and workforce growth is slowing. Number two, we are lagging in this country in terms of education and skill levels. And then the third thing I worry about, we've deleveraged at the consumer level since the Great Recession.
Consumers are borrowing less and paying off
debt.
But
we are more highly leveraged than we've ever been at the government level. And the recent legislation, part of it, the corporate tax reform, I think may help sustainable growth. But a big part of this legislation was a tax cut funded by increasing the debt, which is going to give us a short-term bump in GDP.
Yep.
And then we're going to get back down to trend growth over the next year or two, except we're going to be more leveraged. And ultimately, we've got to moderate this debt growth.
We're going to have more debt with the same old consistent 2-ish to 2.3% growth.
Yeah. And the reason that's my concern. And the reason, by the way, GDP is made up of two things, growth in the workforce, growth in productivity. And again, with aging, workforce growth is likely to be sluggish. Productivity isn't going to make up for the slow workforce growth. And then you add a third thing. We're highly leveraged.
Yeah.
That's a bad combination.
As the guy responsible for the Dallas Fed, but also as a member, non-voting this time, of the Federal Open Market Committee, what keeps you up at night?
really these that we're not talking enough about these big structural drivers. So there's cyclical things, inflation, yep. unemployment.
Right.
The news tends to get obsessed with these cyclical things, and those are the things that I want to make sure we're spending more attention on in this country.
Do you think? I mean, you're talking about it, and I'm talking about it. Millions of people are going to hear this. Are we not talking about it enough, or are people not listening enough?
So our policies need to match up with these issues. So if I told you immigrants and their children made up over half the workforce growth in the United States over the last 20 years, yeah. you would say, yes, let's toughen the borders, let's improve the scoring. But if you think we're going to grow GDP by shrinking immigration, we should rethink that. You would also say, let's really have a national initiative to improve educational attainment, early childhood literacy, and skills development. And then thirdly, you'd say, at this stage in the cycle, when we should be reducing debt to GDP, because we know in a recession, yep. leverage goes up, yep. let's be very careful about trying to reduce debt to GDP when times are good, or moderate debt growth, because you don't want to be doing that when you're in a recession. That's not the time to be doing it.
Couple of sort of macro issues, big picture issues I want to run by you. The first is America and the global trade environment. You represent the Dallas Fed, very close to Mexico. There's yeah. NAFTA renegotiations going on.
Yeah.
The White House is making no secret of its disdain for yeah. multilateral international agreements.
I'll be in Mexico Friday.
Have a lovely trip. How worried are you?
So I spent a lot of time in Mexico, and the Dallas Fed, we have a history of being very close yeah. To Mexico. We're the largest exporting state in the country.
Huh.
And so—
To Mexico?
No, in general. We're the largest exporting state in the country, huh. period, Texas is. Mexico is our largest trading partner, but we do a lot of research on trade. And the bottom line, I've said publicly, based on our research, we would be well served to segment our trading relationships. What do I mean by that? Our trading relationship with Mexico is primarily an intermediate goods relationship. 70% of the imports to the U.S. from Mexico yep. are intermediate goods, not final goods. They're goods that are going back and forth across the border 15, 20 times
right.
as part of complicated logistics and supply chain arrangements.
Pair of jeans going to get stitched and sewn and decorated and back and forth.
Car assembly, gotcha. You
Got
name it.
Got it.
Some work done here, some there. What it's allowed U.S. companies to do is keep plants here in the United States and add jobs here, and it's made this hemisphere, i.e. North America, mm-hmm. much more globally competitive. If we didn't have that trading relationship with Mexico, in our judgment, we'd likely lose many of those jobs elsewhere in the world, probably to Asia. We need to be thinking about North America as a competitive hemisphere that competes with Europe, competes with Asia, and segment our relationships.
Well, yeah, but when the president says, listen, I'm going to get us out of NAFTA because it stinks, and we don't want to be in TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because they're robbing us blind, or whatever it is that he says, then what goes through your mind?
The trading relationship with Mexico is strategically vital. The trading relationship with Mexico has improved U.S. competitiveness, and that part, I think, shouldn't be lost on this decision making.
Globalization, you have said 10 or 15 years ago, might have been a threat. Now it's an opportunity, you say.
We're about 5% of the world's population. If we're going to grow, we need to be more integrated with the world. And I think we've now made the adjustments in this country to get the benefits of globalization. Too often, if there's a disruption in a town or a company, it's being blamed on globalization. It's much more likely today. Technology-enabled disruption that's happening within our borders. And I think if we get that diagnosis wrong, we're going to make poor policy decisions.
Let me take you back to your pre-Fed civilian life. You taught at Harvard. You wrote extensively on leadership. So I want to now merge the two paths. Explain to me and characterize for me the leadership challenge that Jerome Powell now faces as the Fed chair.
Well, and Jay is, I think—
I call him Mr. Powell. But
yeah, it's okay. Jay is a fantastic choice to lead the Fed. I've been working intensively with him for the last 2.5 years. The most important from a leadership point of view, mm-hmm. you've got to be an authoritative analyst of the economy in your own right. He is. And then you've got to be good at forging a consensus among all of us around the table. Whether we vote or not, we all have input mm-hmm. into this decision. I think Jay's great at both. I think the most important leadership quality I've learned you need to have as a central banker, but that's been true in my past life, but it's particularly true, is an openness to learning, willingness to face reality, adapt, and say, I've changed my mind, or I'd like your advice, or maybe I was wrong, is not a bad thing to be able to say and adapt to a changing reality. I think Jay's very well equipped to do that. But I also, even for myself, I remind myself of that every day. That those are important skills you need to have in this job.
Robert Kaplan, president of the Dallas Fed. Thanks a lot for coming in.
All right. Great to talk to you, Kai.